Anybody here ever run a relay race? Everybody relay? Yes? Like you're that old. Relay race. I know Eli. I know. But yes. Ran for Boonville. Ran relay, right? Which one did he run? Was 4x800? That one will wear you out. Absolutely. I saw a video of him running around the track, and it's just so fast. Boy's just moving, man. It was awesome. When you are in a relay race, what is it that you're handing to the next player? The baton. Everybody knows what a baton looks like. You can see it on the screen there. It's a little dark, but I could probably make it out. So it's like metal tube, you will, or plastic or whatever. But handing that off, and you got to get it from your hand into your teammate's hand, right? And the exchange is so critically important, right? So you got to get your hand back there, and it's got to be just right, because if you miss that thing, you know, you're like, yeah, yeah. And the next runner can't race until he's got the baton, because you can't finish without the baton. You got to keep passing the baton. It's the only way that you're going to make it to the end. And so for me, it's oh my goodness, it's stressful just because there's so much anxiety just watching that. Oh, is he going to drop it? Is he going to drop it? And then, you know, and then the good ones just do it seamless and they're just gone, right? And when I saw that video of Eli had taken the baton in that race that he was racing in, it was like, I never even saw the baton. It was just like, bam, bam, gone. Like, phoom. That was pretty good. That was a good sound effect. But I was thoroughly impressed. And I know that they practice that again and again, right? They practice that as much as the running, probably almost. Like every time, even I've seen them when they warm up for a meet. Like you'll see them out there on the field and or on the track, you know, and they'll practice just that movement and take off, and then they'll practice with the next one, you know, just practice that exchange. Because it's so important. It's so super important. There's a prophet I mentioned earlier by the name of Elijah. I didn't preach much on Elijah, but we're going to use part of his story today. And if you'd like to follow along in the Bible as I go through today, I want to encourage you or invite you to go into the Old Testament. You can go into the book of 1 Kings today, and we're going to be in chapter 19. And I'm going to read 16 through 21 here in just a moment. But I want to set a little bit of the backdrop of this story so you kind of know where I'm picking it up. And I already shared a little bit about it when we were at our prayer time and is at the cross, because Elijah was God's a prophet that God had called to serve in ministry. And so his ministry was largely to, like all the other prophets, go and tell the people to repent, right? Turn away from your sin, turn back to being faithful to God. And his ministry was really seemed to be focused on going to address the problem of Israel through the king and the court worshiping a fake god called Baal, B-A-A-L. That was a Canaanite god of storm and fertility, which seems like a weird combo but anyways. And so the royal court in Israel they were worshiping and had people worshiping and yada, yada, yada. And so it was a big mess. And so God's calling them, repent of that, stop worshiping false god, and come and follow me, right? And worship and serve and live this life that I've created for you and given you the opportunity to have. So Jezebel, who's King Ahab's wife there in Israel, was a strong proponent of that false worship. Well, when Elijah steps up and is saying, hey, this is wrong, and then they have this whole big showdown where, you know, God proves that Baal is not a real god, and that might get into all that story today. But Jezebel gets mad because Elijah has the prophets of this false god killed. That was their judgment for their idolatrous, rebellious, sinful work. Jezebel got really mad and put a bounty, if you will, on his head that he was to be killed. And Elijah finds out about it, and he is scared to death, and he runs. And he goes out into the desert, takes a beeline straight out of town. And he gets out there to the desert, and he finds this little tree, and he just sits down under the tree, and he just has kind of a Job kind of moment, like, woe is me, I hate this, I'm so tired of it, I wish I was dead. I'm done. And an angel comes to him, and this angel ministers to him and tells him to eat and drink and regain his strength. You know, it's like, you're not done. And whatever, he's like, okay. But it goes up to the top of the mountain, Mount Oreb, which is probably the same as Mount Sinai, which some other famous Bible character also had a personal encounter with God. Remember who had an encounter on Mount Sinai with God? Moses. And so here Elijah, like Moses, has this encounter with God. And it's there I want to take you right now in 1 Kings chapter 19. So let's start at verse 16. Let's see if I can have some fun with these names here. 1 Kings chapter 19, verse 16. All right, so he's told him, he wants you to go back the way you came, all right? And so when you get back to where you're going to end up going, he says, I want you to anoint Hazael, king over Aram. Also anoint Jehu, son of Nimshi, king over Israel. And anoint Elisha, not to be confused with Elijah, right? Elisha, son of Shaphat, from Abel-Meholah, to succeed you as prophet. So he says, Jehu will put to death any who escape the sword of Hazael, and Elisha will put to death any who escape the sword of Jehu. Yet I reserve 7,000 in Israel, which is to say, all whose knees have not bowed down to Baal, and all whose mouths have not kissed him. Everybody that's been faithful to Yahweh, he's saying, I choose to save those. Look at verse 19. So Elijah went from there, and he found Elisha, son of Shaphat. He was plowing with 12 yoke of oxen, and he himself was driving the 12th pair. That's a lot of power right there. And Elijah went up to him, and he threw his cloak around him. And Elisha then left his oxen and ran after Elijah. He says, let me kiss my father and mother goodbye, and then I'll come with you. Go back. Elijah replied, what have I done to you? Which sounds like a weird question a little bit, right? But it doesn't translate perfectly. It's a statement of saying, okay, go back, do as you please. Like, you know what's just happened to you, and you know what's the opportunity in front of you. So Elisha left him and went back. He took his yoke of oxen and slaughtered them. He burned the plowing equipment to cook the meat and gave it to the people, and they ate. Then he set out to follow Elijah and became his attendant. The word of the Lord. What a moment for Elijah, and what a moment for Elisha. So Elijah gets frustrated, and he's ready to throw in the towel and to say, I'm done. Like, I've just slap had enough. I'm tired of this. I don't want to run for my life anymore. It's just not, it's not something I want to do. And God tells him, I'm to hand off the baton of ministry to Elisha, to the one that's going to come after him. I want you to notice in the story that not only is Elijah called by God to serve, it's cutting in and out for some reason, but so is Elisha in this story. It seems like Elijah is the one that's just going to go and say, hey, come and be with me. But in fact, Elijah knows that Elisha is going to be the one, because God says, I want you to go to him, and he's going to come with you. It wasn't just that Elijah was going to just like go, here's the reins. Go get it, tiger. I wish you well. Let me know if you have any problems. It was, hey, you're going to come with me, and I'm going to mentor you, and I'm going to teach you, and you're going to learn what it means to be a prophet of God, because it's like nothing else in the world. Like, you've been farming, and you get all of that, but I'm calling you to something that's way different, and that's a good thing, and it's scary, and I want you to just come. Let me enjoin you to my side. And you're not just going to be Elijah 2.0. Because you have your own role to perform as God's prophet. You're going to go places and you're going to see people and you're going to do ministry and you're going to heal people. And your ministry is just going to be, it's going to be kind of light, but it's not going to be the same. It's going to be different, but it's going to have God's hand on it. You imagine being Elisha out in that field. He's farming to take care of his family. He's doing what he knows. He's putting his life into it. He's working hard. The Lord invites him to push pause on that and take another direction. Like, pivot, turn. We use another sports metaphor, right? Basketball. Pivot, turn. We're going to take a little different direction here. And I want you to walk away from what you knew, what you felt was safe and easy. And I want you to step into another chapter that's going to challenge you. I promise, Elisha, this is going to challenge you. It's going to be stuff that you've not done before. It's going to be hard. It's going to wear you out. It's going to stress you out. You're going to get gray hair. That's just me. God did not call Elisha because Elisha already had everything he needed to go be a prophet. He didn't really have anything other than faith. God called him first, knowing that he would equip and empower him to do the work that would lay before him. I remember when I accepted my call to ministry, I was eager and willing. Woo! Let's do it. Right? So it was like, take some of Carrie's energy and like put that on me. And that was kind of like some of me when I first started out. I was so pumped, and I had no clue what I was doing. Some would say 20 years later, I'm not sure you still do, but I'm trying. And if you put that next picture up on the screen, so I was at my church that I was attending. Leslie and I were already married. It was down in Daphne, Alabama. And this is the church that we were at. It's since been sold to a different church. But anyways, it was called Austin Road Community Church, and it was down in Daphne, Alabama. It was about 45 minutes north of Gulf Shores. Not a bad place to be, right? If you like the beach down there. Well, that's the place where I said yes to the Lord to serve him in pastoral ministry. And I told the church the same time that Leslie found out. Hindsight, probably shouldn't have done that. Probably should have told her first, but that's just the way it all came about that day. Anyways, and so the pastor at that church, he took me under his wing, and he was teaching me, and he was pouring into me. He would help me to learn almost every single aspect of doing ministry in the church, right? Youth ministry and music ministry and associate pastor stuff and just taking care of the buildings. I mean, like everything, right? A small little kind of country church, you know, you do it all, so to speak. So he was teaching me all this stuff, and I remember one day that he taught me something that transformed the trajectory of how I saw my relationship with God and my role in the church. And it was what I just said to you about Elisha. He said, Andy, he said, God does not often call the equipped. He equips the called. That was impactful for somebody who didn't have a clue what he was doing. But I had enough schooling education to think that I was smart enough, right, kind of thing. But he helped me to just, that education is good, but you got to remember, God didn't invite you into this time of receiving a baton in ministry because you had it all. He called you. And if by faith you would say yes, he will give you everything you need to go be effective for the mission he's given you. That was the first time I'd ever heard that way of thinking. And it transformed me. My faith, my ministry, just how I did life, how I thought about the future. Then I got my first church as a full-time pastor. So I'll show you the next picture on the screen. This is Austin Road Community Church. It's in Grass Lake, Michigan. It's a little bedroom community. It used to be a farming town and transitioned into a bedroom community. And there, I had an installation service. It was shortly after I got there. And so an installation service, if you've never heard of that, it's just a formal church service where some leaders in the church and the board of the church and everybody, they just kind of gather around and they officially acknowledge that, you know, you are the pastor of the church, and they charge you to embrace your leadership and the responsibility that's tasked to you as the pastor. So we had that church service, and I was ready to receive the baton, and of course I did. And at my service that day, the founding pastor was able to be there, and he wanted to have a moment where we would just do this symbolic act where we had, I don't even remember what it was we used, but we actually had something physical, and he wanted to do like a literal symbolic passing of the baton. He had planted that church. He was retirement years, and he had planted a church, and then it was time to transition. And so he and I got up in front of that church there, and that's a really small church. You know, there's not much more than what you see on that picture. Small. And we stood in front of that congregation, and we had that moment. I got to tell you, he and I were as different as night and day in almost every single way. Age, way of seeing the world, thinking of pastoring, even when we shared a relationship with Jesus, right? I mean, that was the same. But even how we lived out that life, you know, just daily was a little different. And it was just, we were just so, so different. And he ended up having he wrestled with the letting go, right? To extend the baton, hand it off, and to be able to say, it's your turn. And our church worked through that. Our leaders were great, and it turned out fine. And we're so blessed. I mean, just, you know, about 2.5 years, you know, we worked in ministry. We're about 50 to 100 people, and it was a fun journey. But I believe that it turned out like it did for the season that I was there, because the one that handed me the baton had already built a strong foundation of faith in that church. And my job was not to change that. My job was to just build on that foundation. And so we, from there, built an evangelism, compassionate-focused ministry in the community. And God enabled us to just transform the image of that church in the community and see people saved and baptized and meeting the human needs of people in the community. And it was great, great time. We impacted a lot of lives, and that was wonderful. And I started to see my gray hair, like I mentioned earlier, just started to go more and more and more. And it started here, and it moved around to the back and then up top. And this will have Leslie cut my hair short so that it's not quite as noticeable, but it's not working. But I wouldn't change any of it, because the journey is worth the cost. Ministry is a challenging relay race. You know, the goal is you want to exchange the baton of faith to the next generation, right? You want to see your kids come to know Jesus, grandkids come to know Jesus. You want to see the ones you're reaching out to come to know Jesus and have a relationship with him and see their lives transformed. Co-workers to see that happen. Like you, that's, we're all about that. That's part of passing the baton. But so is serving in ministry and leadership. That's also of vital importance in the life of the church. The whole journey is tough. And it comes with a cost, which is why I feel it's one of the tough topics in the church to talk about. And so we've been in a series called Tough Topics. We've hit some challenging theological topics and just some practical, and today is kind of one of those practical topics as I bring this series to a close. And I want to give my perspective on why I think it's a tough topic to talk about in the church. So, we've got a somewhat decent swath of generations here today, and so is everybody familiar with the baby boomer generation? Kind of what that range means, yeah? Okay. What about Gen X? Is that kind of familiar? So that's the kids of the baby boomers, typically. And then the kids of Gen X are right around the millennial age. It doesn't all perfectly work out that way, but it's relatively close, right? And then you've got, right after younger them, you've got Gen Z, which those kids are like middle to high school now, that kind of stuff. And so that's kind of the way that works. So the baby boomers have been doing the lion's share of leadership and ministry in the church for many years, largely because that's just the way that as they became adults and grew older and closer towards retirement, that age of being able to lead, right, and to serve and to work and have the capacity and the ability to do that, that's just natural part. It was their turn, right? I mean, it was tasked to the baby boomer generation to lead us forward, right? Alongside the builder generation, which is their parents that were already in the life of the church. All right. Well, the baby boomer generation that's been doing a lot of that leading and working is beginning to sense that it's time to hand the baton to their kids and to their grandkids, which we established, right? The Gen X, the millennial, and so on. So that those younger ones can be the Elishas that take the baton of ministry beyond to another chapter, which is what Elisha did for Elijah and did in the ministry that God had gave him the opportunity to do. Not to be, right, the Elijah 2.0, but to go and serve. So that's the expectation that exists for the baby boomer generation. Now, the challenge that is existing, and this is not just in church too, this is also out in the secular world, because we're seeing the same thing also happen out in other parts of just life. Because this is a life issue. This is not just a church struggle. This is a life struggle, okay? But it's impacting the church, so we got to talk about it. And that's what we're doing. So what's happening is the baby boomers are not seeing enough younger ones step forward to say we're ready to take the baton, and seeing that it's our turn. Like, we've got to step forward. Just like our parents and grandparents did, it's becoming our time to receive and to take off. And there are multiple reasons for that. I'm not going to get into all that today, but nonetheless, you've heard me say before, maybe, that when you have unmet expectations between people, you start to breed conflict. And it tends to go unspoken for a while. Here's the reality of what lies in front of us. Just be crystal clear about this. Over the next 10 to 15 years, is about probably general window that we may be looking at. Over the next 10 to 15 years, if that baton does not change hands, the church is in a world of hurt all over the place. Largely in the West, but one could say worldwide. But we're in the West, so let's just focus on where we are, right? It's got to happen. It's not a matter of preference, it's a matter of necessity. Because a generation is aging out, and that's just natural. And they're needing to pass the baton to those who are coming up behind them, who will continue the mission that they've given their lives to, in obedience to Christ. Churches are going to begin to close at an even faster rate than they have been, if that transition doesn't happen, because there's not going to be enough to step forward and to lead the church forward. You guys are doing great work, and I love serving with you guys. I don't plan to go anywhere, but I know this transition has to happen. It's a fact of life. We can't run from it. We got to face it. So how do we address it then? Well, you know that phrase, don't shoot the messenger? Okay, well, can I ask you, don't shoot the messenger? No, I'm just kidding. I'm being serious on this. So let me, a word to the Elijahs and a word to the Elishas and then a word to all of us. Let's do that. So a word to the Elijahs who are ready to hand off the baton. I want to take the story of Elijah and I want to let that shape what I'm going to say. I want to encourage you to be confident that God is calling you to hand the baton and not your own frustration or your own emotions or your own tiredness. Be confident that God is calling you to hand off the baton. Elijah was in the desert and then he was on the mountain. He was afraid and he was tired. And he was wrestling, he was struggling. But when you read the story, it wasn't until God tells him that it's time to hand the baton that he knows it's time. The baton was still meant to be his through his struggles, through his wrestling, right? Through his anxieties and his fear that he was just like, I'd rather die. And that's literally what he says, I'd rather die. It's kind of thing. But God had not taken the responsibility off of him even in the struggle. Just be sure that God is calling you with the timing versus your feelings and your emotions. They are valid, but they don't always tell us the truth. Our feelings and emotions don't always agree with God's will. And it is God's will that we want to be faithful to. And to the Elijahs, I would also say, we cannot keep responsibility from the younger generation. I know it sounds almost counterintuitive what I've been saying, right? But for years, I've done this, and I had to be convicted of it and stop doing a bad habit. I know now you're wondering, ooh, what dirty laundry is he sharing today? Well, is this. I had the habit of saying no for people and thus not inviting them into service to the Lord. They're way too busy. They have too much going on. I don't want to stress them out. We don't want to see them leave the church. We don't want them, blah, 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 blah. You know, right? And so we say no to somebody instead of giving them the opportunity to say yes or no to the Lord themselves. Make sense? I got convicted. I got to quit doing that. I wanted to be polite. But then I remembered my own story, too, that God didn't call me in ministry because I was at a time when I didn't have a job and had nothing going on. And I was like, yeah, I can do that. No, I had a job. I had a wife. I had family and friends and building a career to start climbing the ladder. I was getting ready to go back to school to get my CPA license. I went back to college to finish up my hours I needed, and I was working on that path. And I was like, this was not on my vision board, God. We weren't even doing vision boards then. That was not even a thing at the time. Yes, somebody may be busy, and it may not seem like the logical thing, but if God is putting it on your heart to invite them, I want you to consider the other side of it. God may want them to say yes so that he can work with them to rearrange their life to make him more of a priority versus whatever it is that is consuming or taking over their life or whatever seems to be so busy. God may want them to make some changes in their lives to help lead them on a path of having a more fruitful, peaceful life because they're overwhelmed. If God's calling you to invite, you do obedient invite. Allow them to listen to the Lord, to seek him. And if they say yes, God will work with them. And if they say no, and it's what God wants, God will work that out within them as well. That's not on you. to manage. That's their walk with the Lord to flesh it out, right? Try not to say no for people that God may want them to say yes for a reason you don't even know about. Okay, that's all for the Elijahs. I hope I still have a job after today. So what about the Elishas? So on the Elishas who can receive the baton. All right, here we go. Be careful that your career and family responsibilities, including community engagement, activities, and so on, comes in all shapes and sizes, be careful that those things don't keep you from receiving the baton that God wants you to receive, and he's leading someone to hand to you so that they can mentor and disciple you to step into leadership in some way or another, or maybe just to serve in ministry. Elisha was working on that farm, right? So 12 pair, 12 times 2 is how much? 24. Confident in your math, you got this. The power of 24 oxen. Like, that's a lot. That'll do some farming, right? He must have had a decent-sized farm that he's working to have that many oxen. The family must have had some decent amount of money. And so he's out there working, feeding his family. He's, if that large, is more than likely he's also selling produce at market with that money, then is taking care of his family. Like, he's helping to sustain his family by the work he's doing. This guy's a farmer, I'm going to guess, through and through. And unexpectedly, perhaps, Elisha comes and confronts him with this decision that he's got to make. He takes his cloak and he throws it over him, which seems kind of weird, but to them, not so much. Like, that was a time saying, I'm choosing you. My covering is over you. I want you to come with me. I want you to join me. Take this journey with me. And it seems that Elisha, he evaluated the cost. I'm going to imagine he also talked to his family and that they stood behind his decision to follow Elijah. And he goes. He had to leave his home. He had to rearrange his life. He had to learn new stuff. He had to do things he'd never done before. He had to go to places he may not have ever been before. He had to go have difficult conversations with people in highfalutin positions and go into the court. I promise you, life would have been simpler for Elisha if he had just said, Elijah, I pass. I'm just going to farm because farming's what I know. I can handle that. It's not too stressful. I can manage it. Thanks, but no thanks. I'm going to take a pass. Maybe later. Yeah, no. It would have been simpler. But it would not have been as impactful on his life, on the people that he ministered to, the towns that he went to, and to the royal courts that he spent time ministering in. To the Elishas, I want to say, don't fear the cost if God's calling you to serve him. Don't fear the cost if God is calling you to serve him. It's going to cost. Count the cost, Jesus said. It's there. Not so that, oh my goodness, are you guys okay? You know what Jesus taught? He said, count the cost. If a builder was going to build a building, right, he would first count the cost to see if he had enough to complete it. Sometimes in the church, we've taken that teaching and that little parable, right, to mean, well, if I don't have enough, then I get to say no. Because if I can't do it right, then I'm just not going to do it. Do you realize that's not what that teaching, that parable is about? Jesus is not saying that gives you an out to say, I pass, Lord. He's saying, count the cost, know that it will cost you, and then whatever you need to do, you get what it's going to take to say yes and go. If you were going to do it, if you're going to build a building, you say, it's going to cost me $1 million and I only have $500,000, Jesus' point is not walk away from it. Say, then go get the other 500,000. If it's going to take you a million, go get the million. If you don't have what you need and I'm calling you, come to me that I may give you what you need. That's the heart of what that parable is teaching. It's going to cost you. But the one given the financing is God. Ooh, that'd be careful on that one. He will provide what you need, and you've got to use wisdom. If God's calling you to serve Him, I have learned this. You will gain more with Jesus than you will miss in the world. If God's calling you to serve Jesus, you will gain more with Jesus by saying yes than you will miss in the world because you're afraid of missing out. I have been there where I didn't want to take on responsibilities and service to Christ in His church because that's going to take me from doing stuff with things that I enjoy doing out in just, you know, whatever, personally, recreationally, with my kids, sports, and those type, whatever, right? Like, I know that struggle. We have lived that struggle. Even being a pastor in ministry, going, I want my kids to be able to do certain things, and I want them to have certain experiences, and this would be great for their future. And it's like, yes, fantastic. But that's not worth, one hand, it's not worth what you have to give up in service to the Lord. Like, that gain is not as good as the gain from saying yes to serve the Lord. Like, that is, serve the Lord comes with its own benefits and its own fruit and its own joy, its own testimony that is different than the world's. It's just different. But we get so afraid of missing out on worldly things that we say, Lord, I can't because it's just too much. And the Lord says, it's not too much. You just need to rearrange your life. You gain more from saying yes to Jesus than you miss in the world. So let me just quickly talk about all of us. How do we handle that? So what do we do with this? Now that everybody, I've probably offended, not offended, but everybody feels a little uncomfortable. Yay, it's good. I don't know. So what do we all do then? We got to talk openly. Talk openly about the chapter that we're in life right now. How do we, and so let me just real quick on this, check this out. When one of the ways to do this is ask questions of each other. Maybe it's your friends, it's small group, it's in leadership meetings, it, wherever it may be, but ask questions to learn each other's perspectives. Because your perspectives shape your expectations. Your perspective of how you see life shapes your expectations. Your perspectives of God shape the expectations of God. Your perspectives of the church shape your expectations of the church. So we could chase that rabbit. Ask questions to learn each other's perspectives, because odds are the person sitting in the chair, almost wanted to say pew, but didn't do it, is different than your perspective. Baby boomer generation's perspective on life and the world and the church is different than Gen X and millennials. It's not a bad thing, it's just reality, because the way they've experienced life is just different. There is no way that a baby boomer's kid can see the world the same way as their parents. They just can't, because life is not the same for them. The world they're in, it is different than the world that's baby boomers that you grew up in. I can't see the, I'm a Gen X, right? So I just can't, I can never come to the point to understand my parents' point of view and perspectives completely, because I didn't have their experiences. And they grew up seeing the world different than me. Your grandkids, whoo, millennials and even younger, they just have had tremendously different life experiences. And there's a list of things we could go over. I'm not going to do that, right? They're just going to see church and life differently. So one of the best things we can do to love them is to ask questions to understand their perspectives on faith and life and the church. And listen. Listen to learn. Be careful that you don't listen to be understood, but listen to learn. Doesn't mean that they are right or you're wrong or vice versa, but listen to understand. How do they view life, the church, and the way that we can love, grow, and serve Christ through His church? And as your understanding grows, then invite us to explore some ways we can help each other exchange the baton with mentoring and empowering each other and being innovative and how we pull this off. I don't think there's a cookie cutter. That's when I know it's time to shut up and stop talking. There's not a cookie cutter way to go through this season that we're in. There just isn't. You really just have to just talk, and you got to listen. And you know, when you ask good questions and seek to explore and be innovative and think, how do we make this work? Because the way that we make it work here at New Hope is going to be different than the way the church down the street and around the corner is going to make it work, because they just have a different mix of people. We have to figure it out ourselves and trust that God will lead us. And if our heart is really what Christ wants, and that is to see people in this community come to know Him and to have their lives transformed by His grace, and we're willing to figure out creative ways to go do that, like, God's going to help us figure that out, because we want what He wants. He'll take care of us, but He's going to make us put in the work. We have to put in the work. And I know we can. And so I want to encourage us, folks. We have Elijahs and we have Elishas. And we have transitions. It's part of life, right? Let's continue to ask and listen and explore together and not be afraid to count the cost. To see what God may do through the Elishas. That the Elijahs maybe didn't even see coming. How interesting. Thank you. Thank you for listening today. This is a tough topic to talk about. And we don't like to talk about it because we don't want to offend anybody. We don't step on any toes or hurt anybody's feelings. But we got to talk about this and keep talking about it. Right? So let's keep talking and listening, because it's one of the most, that's one of the greatest ways we love each other. And this is one of the most loving churches I've ever been a part of. So let's just love each other well. Amen.